Robin, we have another week in IndyCar news coming out of the Phoenix One Mile Oval, IndyCar's first oval of the year. We just finished a test at the Gateway Oval. Lots to talk about there, but I figure let's start off with, what did we learn at Phoenix?
Well, unfortunately, we learned that whatever this aero kit is that we had last year was the same result as this year, because it was a stinker of a race, and I haven't had that many emails to the mailbag in a long time, and people just turned it off or either paid to go there and were pretty disgusted with the whole thing. And, you know, I mean, we've both been to races that aren't very good. It's just your hopes. Ryan Hunter Race had it best after the race, after they tested in October and they made some suggestions to change. And they were basically tabled to 2018, which we understand. There's a new car, and owners don't want to spend money. But like Ryan said, why would you come back knowing it's going to be the same thing? And they all predicted it after the test in February that it was going to be just like this.
Yeah, there were a lot of drivers from Ray Hall to Hunter Ray to just quite a few who came up to us at the open test in February and said they're not listening. But we've told them what we need to do to put on a good race. Last year sucked. For the drivers, too. I mean, that's the thing is, you know, we tend to think about this in terms of fans. Did people enjoy it in the stands at home? And that's obviously number one. But when you have the drivers getting out of the car going, well, that was lame. I couldn't do anything. And as you wrote, Ed Jones, an oval rookie, was able to hold off cars for 20 laps. And not, you know, nothing against Ed, but he was able to hold off guys that, in normal circumstances, he should never be able to hold off because of the difference of experience. So this was just truly the cars, the aero specification, really driving this type of racing, and taking nothing away from Simon Pagenaud, who was, you know, flawless the entire race. But if Takuma Sato doesn't crash when he does, I mean, Simon Pagenaud was fourth, whatever it was, just before that, and stuck in fourth. No real chance to get around his teammates and move forward. If Sato doesn't crash when he does, you know, I don't think Simon necessarily wins that race. And that's not to criticize him, but that's just more speaking of the issue that we had. And I think the frustrating part, and Robin, you've gotten a lot of people on Facebook. I've had folks as well also on Twitter saying, you know, either A, that I was there and it was horrible. I had one person say, I went to get, I think he said, a hot dog with my friends. And we just decided to leave and just not even go back to our seats. And I wish I was joking. I had another person reach out and say, I brought four friends and apologized to them and didn't make them pay for anything. It was so bad. And I can guarantee you they're never coming back. But I had one other person, and I'd love to hear you weigh in on this as well, who said, hey, I've seen plenty of bad races. I've seen a bunch of stinkers. What? Why all the added or increased frustration or outrage over this one? And for me, it's this. IndyCar, you know, it's been on an upswing. TV ratings haven't necessarily reflected that to open the season, but there's been a lot of positives about IndyCar in recent years. They've made a lot of smart choices, a lot of better choices at least. And here we are trying to break into a market that once loved IndyCars. I mean, my first time there was 87 or 88. I'm sure you were there predating me by 20 plus years, Robin. Great history of Phoenix and IndyCar. And when you go away for a long time and people kind of stop caring, then you come up with a new 3-year deal, which is awesome. Thanks, Brian Sperber. Thanks, PIR. Thanks, Jay Fry, for making that happen. Well, all right. So maybe year one last year, you know, didn't quite understand the everything we needed aero-wise. Didn't do all the testing maybe we should have to figure out what we put on a good show. What's really frustrating is when you do that testing and you find out and you then opt to not use it and you put on an even worse race and the crowd's even smaller. And so 2 years in a row in a 3-year contract at a place that was barely, you know, didn't have that many fans. When you're putting them to sleep 2 years in a row, trying to get IndyCar back into a market that we love and at least we think is important, I just don't understand how you pass. You just take a pass on this one. Let it stink. I just fear that IndyCar really sealed its fate by doing nothing, and I don't know how many more times IndyCar can do that with old tracks like this.
When you think about 20,000 to $15,000 to $20,000 to change the undertrain, put a hole in it. Sorry, patch up the hole. Even if IndyCar said, look, we'll pay for half of it, you guys pay for half of it, we got to do whatever it takes to, we can't repeat what we did last year. That's the frustrating thing. And like I wrote, you know, Jay and his staff have done a great job of being proactive and listening to the paddock and doing things that make sense and saving money the right way and going forward and having a good-looking car for 2018. They're such an improvement over the way it's been. So everybody's entitled to make a mistake, but this was such a crucial mistake because you only got a couple chances to impress these people to come back, and I don't know how you're going to get anybody to come back next year unless you say, look, half price off. I don't know how you do it. I just don't know how you're going to get people to come back if they came to that either one of those first two races and said, brother, Montoya called me yesterday from Gateway. He just got to Gateway and he said, man, I tried to watch that thing Saturday night. He goes, I damn near fell asleep. He goes, just like last year, it was awful. And you know, he's right in the thick of the thing last year. So it's unfortunate because we need Phoenix. We need the climate. We need the track. Brian Sperber's been super positive about bringing IndyCar back. Jay's worked really well with him and Michael Printup of Watkins Glen. And things are going in the right direction on the schedule, too. But you know, this might be the kind of thing where you just IndyCar has to say, look, we're going to co-promote it or we're going to lease the track till we get a winner. Or I don't know what they're going to have to do. But you can't, you know, you just can't have races like Loudon, one go there 1 year and no come back, go to Phoenix 2 years and no come back. You can't do that.
That definitely, but to me the differentiator here is when you are provided a solution and the drivers are so happy who went out there and tested and said, yeah, all right, we found something, we can pass, this works. You know, this is like coming up with a really bad recipe as a restaurant owner, feeding it to all of your dinner guests, everyone saying, oh my God, what was that? Jesus, don't ever serve it again, and saying, okay, well, we found a better recipe, but we're going to save that for the future and come back tomorrow night. We're going to give you the same thing. I just don't know how businesses stay open doing that, and at least in this little microcosm, I don't know how a series like IndyCar that knew the winning formula and chose to ignore it, and the reasons. You know, you mentioned it, Robin. We heard that, you know, one team, it has, let's just say a very powerful and successful Chevy powered team, how's that? Didn't have enough under trays with the correct floors to be able to run in this optimized, better show, better passing type setup. We've heard whispers or rumors that the excuse was that they needed some extra shop space and crushed all of those floors, even though they probably have the largest shop on planet Earth. I mean, you know, at least if we're listening to some of the rumors, and you and I aren't real big conspiracy guys, but, you know, there was some suggestion that there was one big team that said, oh, well, we'd love to do this, you know, this new setup that the driver said would work, but we just don't have the parts and pieces to do it. And you go, yeah, you know, okay, if that's true, then I would just tell you that we certainly learned at Barber, and we certainly saw at Phoenix, that the Chevys, with their really high downforce, more than the Hondas have, and the efficient downforce they have, it's a big differentiator. So if you look at taking some away, changing how it's made, that would potentially tip the balance a little bit more in favor of Honda. You could see how some would allege that, you know, maybe one of the bigger Chevy teams was not too willing to give up what it knew would be an advantage, even if the race ended up being a stinker. So I hope, because I love Phoenix, I love the people there, love the track. I hope that we did not just put the final nail in our coffin with that track, but ultimately, you know, we have a year to find out, and hopefully IndyCar comes up with something to make good with those who either watched or bought tickets. So Gateway, Robin, you and I weren't there on site, but we certainly watched as much of the 6 hours of testing today. Now granted, that was 6 hours on the clock of testing. I don't know how many physical minutes were consumed on the track with a lot of the track problems that they had there, but at least for what we did see, what do you think the cars running around, how'd they look compared to last time you saw them there?
God, I wish I could remember the last time I saw them there. I do. It looked like the Chevy had the fastest five. It repeat of
yep.
Phoenix.
Yep.
So I hope the Gateway, I hope there's a lesson learned and that Gateway's not like senior, you know, not like Phoenix was. So I don't know. I mean, it was good to see AJ Foyt's team on top of the charts for the first time in a long time. I mean, Connor's run pretty well in a couple races this year and had some horrible luck. So, you know, he was 173 miles an hour, and yeah, they didn't get to run the whole time, but he did pretty well as far as, I mean, Montoya, I think, was Montoya second, Marshall?
Connor, who was fastest in both sessions, you had Penske's, there were actually five Penske's there with Montoya being added in. They were 2, 3, 4. And in both sessions, Power was a little bit behind everybody else. But yeah, you had the Chevys being dominant again. This is another high downforce track. It's a little bit longer than Phoenix, you know, 1.25 miles. And you know, it's a place where they use all the downforce. And we're definitely, you know, for IndyCar fans who are looking for trends to follow for the rest of the year, any of the tracks where, call it just maximum downforce is what's needed, other than street courses, you can really look to the Chevys to shine, because they definitely put that extra downforce they have to use in the corners to eke out an advantage over the Hondas. So that was interesting. Dixon was fastest Honda in both sessions. He was P6. The only worrying thing was the gap. Not only a couple miles an hour off of Connor, who was, you know, 173 and change in the morning, buck 76 in the afternoon. But you look at the stopwatch, and again, I know in ovals we tend to go by mile per hour, but you look at the stopwatch, and in the morning, Dixon was sixth, and you go, all right, not so bad out of 21 cars. Then you look at the actual time gap, and his fastest lap was a half second, took a half second longer than Connor's. In the afternoon, it was, I think, 0.7 seconds. I mean, for a single lap, this is fastest lap.
Pretty big.
Versus fastest lap. And you do 200-plus laps, or, you know, however many of the races is, yeah, that's a bit of a concern. So, not too good there. The other issue was, now granted, the track and IndyCar came out and said that there was a ton of rainfall, recent rainfall, and so that caused weepers and some problems around the track, and that's why there were some issues breaking up. Okay, I know that during the first session in particular, they showed a lot of grinding. They showed track staff there with the grinders out trying to grind down things that were causing a bunch of tire cuts and punctures. So that's a big question. Hopefully it's a really easy question to answer, but I don't know if these big, crazy high downforce Indy cars, they're lighter than stock car, of course, but once you start piling on the crazy downforce and the big grip generated by those Firestones, you know, it's definitely a concern as to whether these cars are going to rip up the corners when we get back, if Gateway is going to need to lay down some fresh track surface, whatever it is they decide to use. So don't know if this was just a byproduct of the rain, that water coming up and causing the issues alone, or if it was the IndyCars themselves, just, you know, a big pack of IndyCars punishing the circuit. So anyways, that's definitely something they're going to have to try and get figured out before we go back towards the end of August. Well, we did have Simon Pagenaud win Saturday night in Phoenix, Robin. Are there any other drives in and among things that we saw take place, either people that had good finishes or poor finishes or did stupid things that stood out to you?
JR finishing on the podium, driving with his broken hand, fast as a test, fast all weekend, and it's exactly what he needed. That's what Ed Carpenter's team needed. That was probably the best story of the weekend. And Honda was probably the hard luck story. They lost five cars in the first lap, and then the yellow really hosed Dixon, Kanaan, and Hinch. So Honda got about every bad break you can get. And everybody kind of predicted, they thought it'd be a Penske sweep, and it was, what, 1-2-4?
We also saw our boy Kanaan and our man, Mr. Charlie Kimball, Charlie Murphy. They did an engineer swap with TK, is probably one of his oldest acquaintances on the planet. A man whose floor he slept on when he came over to America in 96 and probably taught him most of the English he knows, both good words and the bad, Eric Cowden, back engineering Tony again. So Chip made that switch himself. It was a unilateral boss move by the boss. Todd Malloy, who had been working with Tony the past couple years, moved over with Charlie Kimball. And we can say for sure that at least at Phoenix, TK was the hot Honda, racing to fifth behind Dixon. So, mean, again, you know, Dixie's always just a beast, but it was just nice to see Tony, you know, coming off a little bit of a slow start to the season, 12th and then 15th, you know, picks up a good 6th in Alabama, reunites with his old engineer and friend Eric Cowden, and boom, is 6th again at Phoenix Power after having a nightmare start, a good solid second place finish, so he jumped forward in the standings. Our boy Hildebrand, you mentioned, 3rd for him. I mean, just, you know, there were some good themes there. I had one person ask Robin, and you tell me if you think, well, I know the answer, but I had one person say, what the hell about Aloshin? You know, shouldn't that guy be penalized? I mean, good Lord, you know, this guy's been hitting everything this year, and he goes and spins on his own, wipes out 5 out of 21 cars. I mean, you know, knocks out 25% of the field almost. Shouldn't they sit this guy down, give him a penalty, do something? I know you're fond of the guy, but you think IndyCar needs to have a talk with our mad Russian friend?
No, I really don't. I mean, he drives hard, and he made a mistake going into one. I mean, you know, it's happened before. It'll happen again. Just, as AJ would say, one of those misfortunate things. And you could tell by Aloshin's interview that we did with him outside the medical center. I mean, he was pretty down in the dumps for what he ruined so many other people's races. So, I mean, you know, he ran pretty good all weekend, and just, who knows what happened, but thing just snapped around and wreaked havoc behind him. So, you know, there's guys that have, you know, PT's probably the classic example. He's always bringing himself up when he's talking on television, but, you know, he was the king of the chrome horn and always rooting and gouging people, and I don't know. I mean, Aloshin's had some. He's tangled with some people in the last couple of years.
Aloshin's no PT though. I mean, he's not even like Pee Wee League first grade amateur. If we're talking, and this is all said with love for PT, but you know, for those who think that Aloshin might be driving over his head and blah blah blah, trust me. There are some others who, you know, we've celebrated for many years who pushed a lot harder, did a lot dumber things, and lost a lot of jobs because of it, and we still love them. So, I'm with you. I would love to see him leave a little bit less carbon fiber on the track. I think that'd be a good adjustment for him, and I think some other drivers would welcome that too, but I don't know if, you know, Mikhail, isn't the type who knows how to really throttle back, and I don't think he'd be the same guy. He'd be pretty boring, so... I don't know if he's found the happy medium this year, but I think he can find it. Listen to that, a little positive ending on that. What else, Robin? We learned that our boy Spencer Pigot looks like he isn't ready to say I'm in, but it sounds like he's preparing to be in for his second Indy 500 with a team that we can't mention, Yonkos Racing. Provided all that happens, do we think we know who his teammate would be? Are they still searching? You know, again, Ricardo has a heart attack anytime we talk about anything, and, you know, we love the guy, but we also have to kind of do our job. But what do you think, Robin? You think Spencer might know who is going to be alongside him if he's in that car, or not yet?
Well, we both saw Gary Peterson at Phoenix, and, you know, he's been Saavedra's godsend for a decade, so, I mean... And I think Ricardo's really adamant he'd like to have a couple guys that have at least some experience. I mean, Spencer's only got one start, but at least he's got some experience, and Saavedra's got a few starts, so it's not like... I mean, Kyle Kaiser probably needs another year before he comes in, and you know, you don't want to rush the guy. And the only other... I mean, there's, I guess, Alex Tagliani would be the other one that would come to mind that could jump in and has certainly got a lot of experience, but... You know, Matt Brabham doesn't have any money. He'd like to drive, and Steph Wilson wants to drive for sure. But I don't know. I think Peterson's got enough. Ricardo needs money, so I would think Peterson and Saavedra have the inside track.
Well, we're gonna get to farewell here for one IndyCar legend and hero, and send some really positive thoughts and love to another. But before we get to that, to close, Robin. We're doing this, this is actually the earliest we've ever done the Week in IndyCar News. This is being done on a Tuesday night, because you are going to be busy in Indianapolis with one Fern Alonso tomorrow, with what is supposed to be his first IMS oval test, weather, provided the weather complies. I was going to go out, ended up canceling that after we were after some news was shared with us by IndyCar on Saturday that had you and I looking at each other trying to make sense out of something that didn't make a whole lot of sense. Should I crack that open? You want to? What do you think?
Thankfully, they told you because you already had your plane. You had your trip planned.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, they. You and I were filming some stuff and were informed that. Despite sending out a media advisory the Friday before Phoenix, so, you know, by that time, it might have even been the Thursday, but asked media to RSVP. You know, it's not something that you get too often, but regardless, you kind of see that they're wanting to get a feel for who was coming out and, you know, make sure that they wanted, let's just say, valuable assets there. And so did that 8 or 9 days prior to this event, and we got the green light. And we're then told Saturday afternoon that, all right, so here's how the test is going to work. No photography, no video, and you're not allowed on pit lane. So, hey, media, come on out to cover Fernando Alonso's big test, but you can't capture it while it's happening, and you can't get near the car. And, oh, hey, that's interesting. And so we asked the question, so other than talking to him at the end of the day when it's over, why would you have the media come out? Why would you extend an invitation and then just a few days beforehand tell folks, yeah, you can be there, but you can't actually capture anything or get near it? And then we figured out that, well, actually there was one workaround, and that was that they invited fans to come out to turn two to watch, and which is awesome. But I know that you and I both had a little bit of a giggle that for the media that covers IndyCar, and again, this isn't just me, I'm talking anybody, any of IndyCar's media, and there aren't that many of us, that would want to cover this big event. If you wanted to get moving pictures, if you wanted to take a photo and post it on your blog or send that to your editor to go up in your report while the test is happening, you need to go out and stand in turn two with fans and shoot behind the same fence. I don't know if they thought that one all the way through, Robert.
Well, it just sounds like to me, as I told you Saturday, it's McLaren, and that's the one thing, the Formula One, all the secretive, you know, nobody comes to their tests and all, nobody's allowed in. It just sounds like, from what we heard, that they told, that they informed Andretti, and then Andretti informed IndyCar, it's not going to be an open test like we maybe thought. So.
But they're going to have live streaming, which you're going to be part of, thankfully, which you hadn't been informed of yet. But they're going to be live streaming it, and IndyCar will be filming it and shooting it. So not really a private test. Bottom line, folks will be able to watch you and Kevin Lee and a certain racer who we love, Mr. Andretti, during the live stream tomorrow. And so what we're going to do is effectively save all that, and hopefully we can do a part two of the Week in IndyCar News if Fernando gets some meaningful laps, although it's supposed to be super frigid. But let's close, Robin, on someone who you knew, you covered, and it was really fun listening to you interview and just hear the reverie held for Joe Leonard by Dan Gurney, AJ Foyt, Parnelli Jones, when you were having to write his obituary, so obviously sad about his passing, but maybe you can share some thoughts about Pelican Joe.
You know, Europe had John Surtees, motorcycle Formula One champ, and we had Joe Leonard, three-time AMA flat track champ, two-time USAC national driving champ, and, I mean, AJ, when AJ Foyt, Dan Gurney, and Parnelli Jones all hire you, you're pretty good. And Foyt, of course, nicknamed him Pelican because he swept down and stole all their money. That was AJ's thing. And Leonard was just, you know, he was 9 laps away from winning Indy, although Uncle Bobby said he was going to blow him in the weeds, which he might have. It's just, it's one of those, he's one of those guys that you, he was just such the, he was such a tough guy, but he was such a good guy and had such charisma. And him and Art Pollard and Bobby Unser and Mario ran around and had a bunch of fun in the 60s and 70s, I can promise you that. But I think the funniest story is when Ontario Motor Speedway was built, the only thing that was, the only civilization within 2 miles of it was the Holiday Inn in Ontario. So everybody stayed there. It was Holiday Inn, desert, and then Ontario Motor Speedway. So they had a breakfast menu, and they named it after the drivers, Gordon Johncock pancakes, Mario Andretti sausage, the Unser bacon and eggs, about Joe Leonard, blah, blah. So one morning, Mario and the Unsers and Joe Leonard were having breakfast, and Mario winked at the Unser brothers and said, "Hey, Al, did you get your, your check yet from these guys for the, you know, letting them use your name, like, you know, like they agreed?" And Al said, "Yeah." He goes, he says, "Is it still $25,000? And Mario goes, "Yeah, $25,000. Well, Joe Leonard went absolutely berserk. "What do you mean? What are you talking about? You're getting paid?" And so he went and stormed at the manager's office and had him around the throat and was going to kill him, and they ran in and rescued the manager. So Joe's just a little gullible. $25,000 to have your name on a menu. But, you know, what he could do on a motorcycle, I mean, I just remember Parnelli and Dan Gurney saying they all went trail riding a couple times, and they were like, "My God, the guy was unbelievable." And you think about, you know, he was an AMA flat track champion, and there wasn't much there, but you and the old bike and the racetrack, there was no safety, and Jose was a tough dude, but a great guy, and he had terrible strokes the last couple years, and bypasses, and the doctor I talked to said hit the last stroke he had would have killed 99.9% of the people. He said he's the toughest guy I ever met, and Foyt said he agreed. He said Paul Goldsmith and Joe Leonard were two of the most underrated drivers he ever saw.
John Andretti, he has one of the most diverse careers. Winner in IndyCar, this is a guy who raced Cup, a guy who's done NHRA Top Fuel, and we learned, unfortunately, that he is dealing with stage 4 colon cancer right now. He was obviously and is obviously hopeful that this can be cured, but I know that over the weekend in Phoenix, there are a lot of people not only love John, care for John, but have fond memories of him long before his memorable win at Surfers Paradise, the first ever in 91, but just someone who, he's an Andretti. He's a part of the family.
The irony is, of course, John's been involved for 20-some years in all these charitable, you know, bowling. He has bowling tournaments and golf tournaments, and he's got all the... He had a car, he put an old car together and had people donate money, and they gave that to a medical facility. So, I mean, his whole being outside of racing has been, you know, trying to raise money for good, healthy projects and to help kids and to help people that are sick. So, you know, I just, sometimes if you catch this early enough, you know, I mean, he's in his early 50s. So, but I haven't called him. I just figured, you know, wait a couple weeks and see how things. I guess he's been taking treatments every day, and the chemotherapy's kicking his butt. So, you know, the guy wants to rest. I just want to bother him.
Well, you have to get up in the morning and put on about 7 layers of warm clothes for what is supposed to be weather in the 30s when you get to IMS, and then folks will hopefully get to watch you and your lovely mug and Kevin Lee and Mario Andretti on the IndyCar live stream. And if we're lucky, temperatures will warm up so one F. Alonso can go out and turn some laps, and we can all be enlightened, feel the rapture, and be swept up into heaven or something.
That's
like
it, buddy. It's supposed to be 50 degrees by 11. That's when Firestone will probably let him out.
All right, my man. Well, again, provided some things go well tomorrow or interesting, we will try and check in with a second, probably shorter edition of the week in IndyCar News. But for now... I'm Marshall Pruitt. This is Robin Miller, and we will speak to you soon.